Welcome to the Florida Roundup this week on Florida Public Radio. Thanks for listening. I'm Tom Hudson in Miami.
And I'm Melissa Ross in Jacksonville. Well, President Trump wants to become a Floridian. Yeah, he filed paperwork last month to change his primary residence to Mar-a-Lago in Palm Beach. Now, this is just the latest sign of Trump's affinity for the Sunshine State, which helped propel him to the White House.
Now, this week in Sunshine State politics, the chairman of the Florida Republican Party canceled its biggest fundraiser of the year, only to have Governor Ron DeSantis put it back on the calendar hours later when President Trump agreed to appear. This on-and-off planning of the annual Statesman Dinner comes as Florida Republicans will certainly play an important role in the 2020 election cycle. And while the state's top Republican, Governor DeSantis, is under scrutiny for two donors to his campaign who are accused of violating federal campaign laws, the governor has given $50,000 donations back. He claims he has no relationship with these two, Lev Parnas and Igor Fruman. The two attended fundraisers and were VIP guests at the governor's inauguration.
We are talking about the Republican Party's influence in Florida politics this hour. We'll go to your calls a little later. Here's what we're asking you, Florida. Let us know which political party reflects your values. Are you a Democrat, a Republican, or an independent? Call us up, 305-995-1800. Tweets to @FloridaRoundup. Also later in the hour, a conversation with conservative author and columnist George Will, formerly a Republican, now an independent.
But first up, Mike Haradopoulos. He has been involved in the Republican Party of Florida for years. When he was the president of the Florida Senate, the GOP had its largest legislative majority in the Sunshine State since Reconstruction. He's written a new book called The Modern Republican Party of Florida. Mike, thanks for joining us today on the Florida Roundup. How important is the Republican Party apparatus here in Florida to the president's reelection effort?
Well, historically, it's great importance because, as I chronicle in our book, we talk about how the party really had that apparatus in place to offset the inherent advantages of the Democrats that had run the state from after Reconstruction till a little the 1990s. And so having that apparatus in place, making sure the volunteers are being used effectively across the state, getting that party turnout, the voter turnout, whether it be picking up absentee ballots or making phone calls or sending out letters, it is absolutely essential that the party and the candidates are on the same page.
Mike, there's been a recent power struggle that's been reported in Florida media over the last couple of weeks between Governor DeSantis and the chairman of the GOP in Florida, Senator Joe Gruters. It was over this fundraising dinner that was canceled. Now it's back on. It appears that President Trump is coming to the dinner. How important is it to the Florida GOP that the president is coming to this event?
Well, it is a big advantage whenever you have the incumbent president on your side, whether it be Barack Obama in years past raising money for the Democrats or more recently now President Trump for the Republicans. It is such an incredible draw to have the president of the United States. The numbers go up dramatically when you're able to bring in a very popular president like Donald Trump is among Republicans. And this will mean a lot more money for the Republicans as they go into a vital election year in 2020. Clearly, there was a big hiccup between the governor and the existing chair. But the good news, at least for Republicans at this point, is that he is coming, and that means big dollars come the Republicans' way.
How detrimental is that hiccup between the chair of the Republican Party in Florida and kind of the standard bearer of the Republican Party in Florida, that being the governor, Governor Ron DeSantis? And this isn't necessarily the first time there's been some, to put it diplomatically, miscommunication between the party apparatus and the governor.
No, it's real, and meaning that we've had problems in the past. I was involved in my own squabble with the former chair, Grim Greer, that was appointed by Charlie Crist, now a Democrat, of course, congressman out of Tampa. We basically told Mr. Greer, you're spending our money in the wrong way. And sure enough, he went to jail for that.
There were fraud charges there with how he was spending that money.
Yeah, not just fraud charges. He was convicted and sent to prison, and rightfully so. But in general, what I've seen, at least out of Tallahassee, is that the governor's the key. I mean, it's the governor that's the big drawing card. It's always been the governor in past years, even when Rick Scott had some issues back here when he was our governor. The governor has to be the driver and mover. He's the one who can call the president in this case or in years past to draw those big donors in, because it's the governor who really sets the tone. And so in this case, I'm glad to see, as a Republican at least, Ron DeSantis getting the president to come down here on, the 7th of December. It will make a big difference, and it'll be up to Joe Gruters in the long term to make sure those dollars are used most effectively come 2020.
Mike, as you mentioned, the president is incredibly popular among Republicans, including here in Florida. At the same time, Democrats and independents in growing numbers support impeachment of this president over allegations he tried to pressure the leaders of Ukraine to help him create a negative storyline about his potential opponent, Joe Biden. So this has reached into the governor's mansion here in Florida. How do you think Governor DeSantis is handling questions about the connections he has to these two associates of Rudy Giuliani, who are accused of not only funneling foreign money into the 28 elections, but also allegedly being part of the so-called quid pro quo that Democrats in Washington are investigating President Trump over?
Well, I don't know all the details of this particular case, but I do know this in my prior years in raising money for the party, et cetera, is that when someone gives you a contribution, it's hard to discern who it's coming from in some cases. And it's in a practical way, how do you investigate who's giving you the money? What you do have is a good treasurer making sure that whoever gives the money is coming from a legitimate American business, which is very important. But beyond that, it becomes very difficult to kind of track the money. Whenever we had a problem in the past, meaning someone gave a check and was later to be a unsavory character, you would just send that money back. And I believe that's what Mr. DeSantis has done to this point. But that's the kind of difficulty you run into is when someone gives you a check, you can't be your own FBI, you can't be your own IRS and go, hey, who gave this money? Give me their background and so forth. All you can do is talk to the person who kind of brought them in, get to know them, and if they found to be not so savory characters, you have to return the money. It's a hard thing to do as a regular candidate.
After the fact here, Mike, the governor did give back that $50,000 donation that was made in 2018 to his campaign, but his administration said the governor didn't know these guys, and then, yes, he knew one of them, kind of, and then more pictures and more videos came out, and sure enough, these guys happened to be in the VIP section of the governor's inauguration in Tallahassee. So how do you think the governor's handled the acknowledgement of the connections, be they real or perceived, to these two individuals?
No, that's a fair question. And again, it, as a former elected in a position of influence like the Senate presidency, which I happen to have in my past, it's hard to know all these donors. When someone gives a large check to the party or to the political campaign and so forth.
Sure, it's hard. But initially, the governor came out and through a spokesperson kind of denied, you know, any connection or really any kind of knowledge of any of this. And then more and more evidence started to build up and there became, you know, a little bit more acknowledgement that that there was an appearance at a couple of fundraisers. And again, there was pictures that unearthed that showed these two individuals in the VIP section of the inauguration for the governor.
No, and again, that's the fair question. And as you probably know, some of these inaugurals are based on, well, this person raised this much or that much. They're going to get preferential opportunities to sit at the inaugural, et cetera. But no, it's a fair question. And I think anytime you make a statement on something that sensitive, you need to make sure the first time you say it the correct way. And I think that's part of the learning curve that any new major elected official. Remember, Ron DeSantis had just been a kind of a two-term, not so well-known congressman until he ran for governor. And of course, President Trump got behind him and the rest is history. But that said, this is part of the learning curve. And when a potential scandal, as you pointed out, comes about, especially when it's national news and it's associated with the potential impeachment of a president, you need to make sure that your first story is correct so you don't have to go and backtrack just like they're doing right now.
Let me ask you about some issues of importance to Floridians, Mike. The majority of Floridians, including a majority of Republicans, support raising the minimum wage. 52% of Republicans think the state needs to do more to address gun violence. That's a bipartisan issue now. And a huge majority of Floridians are concerned about climate change, and they don't think our state and local governments are being aggressive enough about responding to it here in our vulnerable coastal state. So on all of these hot button issues, what would you say to critics of the Republican Party who say that it's out of step with the majority of voters on these critical issues to voters?
No, all those issues that you mentioned are very important to Floridians, and I think that it's one of the reasons why Ron DeSantis won, at least on the environmental issue. He is seen as someone who's going to be aggressive about cleaning up the Everglades, and as we chronicle in our book, the Republicans have been very aggressive about not only that program, but what's called Preservation 2000 and making water quality an important issue. As far as the Second Amendment's concerned, people are worried about gun violence and gun safety, and we are very dismayed by what happened at Parkland, and you saw the Republicans reacted, meaning there were changes to the law. Significant resources were given to public schools across the state to try to handle that issue, not just in putting deputies inside of schools, but also improved telecommunication equipment so that first responders can get there more quickly. And finally, on the general issue of the environment, I think that climate change is a legitimate issue. And you saw the incoming Speaker of the House, Chris Sprouls, talk about that as being a very important issue and how we balance the needs of the business world and climate change. I mean, remember, we're going into a situation right now as we're watching in California where you're trying to strike that balance, making sure that you have power, but also you have that, mm-hmm. that balance. And these are the realities you have to face. And these decisions aren't small decisions. They can make a dramatic impact on folks because these are dollars that could go into other programs. So when you every dollar you invest in, quote, climate change, it means that dollars can be taken away from education, from public safety issues.
We are the most vulnerable coastal state in the union. We have more miles of coastline than any other state. Alaska, I believe, is second. Large majorities of Floridians are increasingly concerned about this, about sea level rise, severe weather, flooding. They're worried about their real estate values. Managed retreat is becoming a real discussion point among municipal leaders around Florida. Is the ruling party of this state, no offense, still sticking its head in the sand over what we're going to have to confront here in the Sunshine State?
Again, these are discussions that are going on in the Capitol as you speak. But before you spend significant resources, remember, unlike in Washington, you have to balance the budget. And that said, Floridians do not support major tax increases. They don't support an income tax. And so you're not going to have a new source of revenue to pay for something. And this is not just a Florida issue. It's a national issue. And it's that balance you try to stake. I mean, even a huge state like California, it produces less than 1% of the entire emissions in the world. And you look at any study, it's in China and India that are producing the vast amount of waste, let alone greenhouse gases. And so you can't just put it on the backs of Floridians, but it's a discussion point worthy of having and how we strike that balance. I think one way that we've done it in recent years, we've moved from coal to natural gas. And you're going to look at more opportunities just like NextEra and other companies are moving towards solar. That's smart because they see the ROI is there, because if you do it too early, it'll be way too expensive on the taxpayers' back.
Mike, you have dealt with the state budget. You dealt with it for a number of years in the Florida House, and you certainly dealt with it in the Senate, and you dealt with some very tough years when you were Senate president coming out of the Great Recession. Isn't it a mischaracterization, though, to say that any dollar spent on climate change or a dollar spent on mitigating the risk or the impact from climate change is a dollar taken away from some other program, given the growth of the Florida state budget that's happened over the last generation, certainly the growth even that we've seen in the last 10 years from the Great Recession?
I think that's a fair question. In my time, again, I speak from a much different time than they're enjoying today. I mean, in my time, we actually had to reduce actual spending, and so it was a much different scenario. But as you move forward, the biggest Pac-Man, as I would call it, in the budget is Medicaid. Medicaid is welfare, health care. Everyone's familiar with it. When I started in the legislature, it was about 20% of the budget. Today, it's about 33 to 35% of the budget. And so those are big programs. And they're not you spend. They're required spends because it's a federal state match. Mm-hmm. And so as that eats up more of the budget, it is, even with the growth in our economy, thus a larger budget, it's that constant pressure of where do you put the money? Because every dollar we put towards whatever program it might be, whether it be healthcare, transportation, or in this case, climate change, it has to come from some other program. You can't just say we're going to stop one area of growth and when we're going to put a new set of dollars into climate change. And then the second part of that is, you guys brought up great points. There's coastal flooding and other issues that people are worried about. As you said, the coastline. Is there a unanimous or near unanimous solution of what we should do to combat that? Because if we're saying that we need to, that's a $1 trillion problem if you're talking about the coastline we're speaking of. And so I don't know that balance, and there's not a consensus of if we do this and we spend money, we're guaranteed to have the ROI on the other side. That's the fair policy discussion we need to have.
That was former Florida Senate President, Republican Mike Haradopoulos. He joined us from member station WFIT in Melbourne. His new book is The Modern Republican Party in Florida. Haradopoulos will be at the Miami Book Fair November 24th.
So are you a Florida Republican? How about an independent who has voted Republican in the past? We want to hear from you. We'll take your phone calls and tweets coming up. 305-995-1800. 305-995-1800. The same phone number, regardless whether or not you're a Democrat, Republican, or an independent here in Florida. George Will joins us now on the Florida Roundup. The newspaper columnist and political commentator has a new book of his own exploring the foundations of conservative politics. The book is The Conservative Sensibility. George, welcome to the Florida Roundup here on Florida Public Radio. How does today's Republican Party reflect what you call the conservative sensibility?
It doesn't. Not for a minute. It's the Republican Party today has become a cult of personality. The issue of protectionism is probably the most revealing. If there's one thing that not just Republicans, not just conservatives, but academic economists have agreed, this is one of the reasons why economics is one of the few academic fields that's moved to the right in the last 60 years, was that free markets work, particularly in free trade. The doctrine of comparative advantage serves both ends of international trade. So Republicans were free traders until Donald Trump came in and said, by the way, you're not for free trade anymore. And they said, okay. And they turned on a dime. So now we have the government under a Republican administration telling the American people what they can buy, in what quantities, and at what prices. If that isn't the essence of bossy government, I don't know what is. The Republican Party has been, throughout most of the 20th century, was riven by liberal conservative factions. The Teddy Roosevelt against William Howard Taft, Bob Taft, Senator Taft of Ohio, against Governor Dewey of New York in the 40s, Goldwater, Senator Goldwater of Arizona, against New York Governor Rockefeller in the 60s. Today, the Republican Party may be more ideologically monochrome, more homogenous, than at any time since it was founded in 1854 in Ripon, Wisconsin.
Sure. I want to ask this question because you sure generated headlines, George, in 2016 when you left the Republican Party because you disagreed so sharply with the direction Donald Trump has taken the GOP. Is that a lonely position for you? 75% of Republicans still support President Trump.
Which is why I'm not a Republican anymore. No, it's not lonely. We're a small but select group who've left the Republican Party. And we left taking with us what was the Republican catechism: limited government, rule of law, civil discourse, all the rest. We are, at the moment, a persuasion without a party, which means we're a little bit like orphans in a windy world. But it's not that lonely out here. There are lots of Americans who feel much the same way, that neither party speaks to them at the moment.
Who will you vote for next year, George? Then who will you vote for?
That's an excellent question. If the Democratic Party would just give us half a chance, people like me would like to vote for their nominee.
George, will you vote in 2020?
I'm sure I will. But please, I don't know who the nominee is going to be.
It sounds as though you'd vote for a Joe Biden or a Pete Buttigieg, but not an Elizabeth Warren or a Bernie Sanders. Am I right?
Correct. In which case, in 2016, I wrote in the name of Senator Sass of Nebraska, and I might write in someone again. But I hope that our oldest political party, the Democratic Party, will come to its senses.
And we're going to take calls from some Democrats and Republicans and NPAs in just a moment here on the Florida Roundup. Your chance to connect with George Will. Back in a moment here on the Florida Roundup from Florida Public Radio. Welcome back to the Florida Roundup. Thanks for being with us this Friday. I'm Melissa Ross in Jacksonville.
And I'm Tom Hudson in Miami. We are talking about the Republican Party in the state of Florida and nationally. Conservative thought as well. 305-995-1800. Which political party best reflects your values going into the 2020 election cycle? Political commentator George Will is still with us from his office in Washington, D.C. George, the big news out of Washington, of course, came out of the House of Representatives this week, voting for an impeachment inquiry debate. There were quotes of founding fathers like Alexander Hamilton that were used by Republicans warning that the House process was unfair and partisan. Do you support the impeachment inquiry into President Trump?
I support the inquiry, but with an enormous caveat, which is the principle that not all impeachable offenses should result in removal from office. Prudence is required here to decide when you're going to overturn the results of an election. 25 to 30% of the American public are hardcore supporters of the current president. They are already embittered about what they take to be a country disdainful of their life and their judgments. And we want to be very careful before we further inflame people in this conviction. Because the answer to a bad election is a better election.
So is it your position then, as a critic of the president, that he should be removed by the ballot box, not by impeachment by the House and conviction by the Senate, which is, frankly, unlikely?
I think that is preferable. Nancy Pelosi announced this inquiry 405 days before the next election. By the time they're done with it, if they rush it through and get it done by, say, Thanksgiving or Christmas at the latest, which they'll want to do so everyone can go campaign, we will be fully into an election campaign where his comportment will be a dominating issue. Let's settle it that way.
What about the argument, though, that this is about upholding the rule of law and the separation of powers, the bedrock of our governmental system?
Well, since I've written a book largely about exactly that, I'm not unsympathetic to it, and I welcome my progressive friends in their belated conversion to concern about the separation of powers. When presidents of their sympathetic to them have been wielding inordinate executive power and disdaining Congress, from Franklin Roosevelt through Lyndon Johnson through Barack Obama, I didn't hear a peep out of them. But this has been a very educational presidency so far, that of 45th.
That's one way to describe it, George.
That's one adjective
presidency
we could use.
Yeah, definitely. Some phone calls here on the Florida Roundup, 305-995-1800. Paul in Broward County is joining us. Paul, you are on the radio. Go ahead.
Hi. I'd like to just say that I definitely identify as a Republican. And the reason is that there's currently no such thing as a fiscal conservative who believes in fundable but necessary social program party. I wish there were. I'd be one of those. When I was a boy, I used to read George Will's columns religiously. I enjoyed them very much, and I don't necessarily disagree with him on a lot of things. However, I would say that the Democrat Party used to be known as the party for the little man. That's what I was taught as a child and what my father believed and he supported. But the only thing I've ever seen Democrats give the little man are handouts, giving them a fish rather than teaching them how to fish. Welfare, food stamps, affirmative action. Now we have a president who's used tax cuts to create jobs, and those jobs are reducing unemployment. So now the little man has jobs, and that tight labor market is pushing up wages. And it seems like everybody's winning. I just don't understand why NPR seems so biased sometimes. There's never anyone who disputes the guests on the air.
Paul, you're with us right now. As I mentioned, it's the same phone number, regardless if you're Republican or Democrat or an independent. And we do appreciate you calling in, Paul, and providing your voice here on the Florida Roundup. George Will is with us. George, how about this idea of economics as they play perhaps toward the advantage in this cycle to the Republican Party? Are they playing that way in your estimation?
Not as much as usual. 10, 20, 30 years ago, if we had economic numbers like this, reasonable growth, particularly rising wages for working class, that would have helped a president. But this president is being judged, not unreasonably in my opinion, largely by the manners with which he wields power and the tone he sets in the country. That the people opposed to him are rock-solid opposed. Those who are for him are rock-solid for him. The swing vote in the middle must be, who in the world is undecided about Donald Trump today? Really?
Yeah.
They could get around a table in a cafe in Miami. So in that sense, I don't think the numbers are going to move people, the economic numbers will move people politically as much as they used to.
Lots of tweets, meanwhile, coming into the Florida Roundup. Here's one from Sharon. I changed my registration from Republican to Democratic last week. The current GOP and their acceptance of Trump's policies disgust me. Here's another tweet. I, too, was a lifelong registered Republican from age 21 to almost 76 years old. But unlike George Will, I am not going to waste my vote. I will vote Democratic this time, no matter who is the nominee. How do you feel about those sentiments, Florida? Give us a call. Let us know where you stand. 305-995-1800 as we speak with George Will. John is in St. Petersburg. Hi, John. Thanks for calling. Go ahead.
Hello.
Hey, you're on the air, John.
I just wanted to say that I'm a lifelong Republican who will never vote Republican again. Donald Trump is the crookedest, lousiest. I can't even say on the radio what I think of him. And I'm going to tell you something, George. You really need to get with the rest of us and really get hard on this guy, because I see you apologizing a little bit for him just because he's a Republican. And by the way, he's not really a Republican. He's a Donald Trumpster. That's all he's for.
Okay, so, John. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
And George Will, as you pointed out, people have strong opinions. So what would you say to a guy like John?
I would say if he can find someone who's more strenuously, has been more strenuously for as long as I, against Mr. Trump as I have been, send him to me. I'll buy him lunch. I'm up here laughing because I have never been accused of being too soft on Donald Trump. The numbers are what they are. Mr. Trump did some things that any Republican president would have done. He cut the corporate income tax. Barack Obama wanted to cut the corporate income tax. He appointed conservative judges approved by the Federalist Society. Any Republican with a pulse would have done that. What Mr. Trump brings that is unusual and distinctive is a culture of extremism and name-calling and lying that we can do without.
Well, let me ask you as a follow-up. You're a never-Trump conservative. Some folks in your camp have been criticized. They might say that Republicans over the years looked the other way at elements of racism, nativism within the GOP that you might have enabled today's culture of Trumpism. What would you say to those critics?
I'd say that I'm responsible for George Will, and George Will has been strenuously pro-immigration forever. I don't think I've changed with the wind at all. And as I say, I left the Republican Party before he was nominated. Once it became clear that he was going to be nominated and was going to be normalized, I left the morning after, and because my friend Paul Ryan had endorsed him. And I said, if a man as cheerful and intelligent and policy serious as Paul Ryan was going to endorse him, they were going to treat this man as normal, which he is not.
George, how do you respond to the sentiment that that John and St. Pete also expressed? Not only did he essentially endorse this idea of never Trump, he is a no longer a Republican. Never to be a Republican again is what John expressed. So what is this president doing as you try to prognosticate about the future? And we know how difficult that can be, George. But as you look toward the future of the Republican Party, where does it land? Where's its lane?
We'll know on the morning after Election Day next November. One election of Donald Trump, because of fewer than 78,000 votes spread over the three states of Wisconsin, Michigan, and Pennsylvania. One election like that is an aberration. A re-election is a pattern. And if we have a pattern of this, the Republican Party will be changed forever. You can already see some Republicans in prominent positions maneuvering to become the successor to Trump, and they want to be the thinking man's Trump. Mm-hmm. Now, I think that's a bit of an oxymoron, but they're trying. I'm thinking of Josh Hawley, Senator from Missouri, Tom Cotton, Senator from Arkansas. But there will be others. Think of former governor and UN ambassador Nikki Haley of South Carolina, who performed the absolutely unprecedented, magical, Houdini-like trick of serving around Mr. Trump and escaping with a reputation intact.
Let's go to Ed in Fleming Island. He's on the line. Hey, Ed, thanks for your call.
Hey, my pleasure. Thank you.
Go ahead.
I'd like to say my wife and I are from the Piedmont section of North Carolina, and that might be described as a Republican stronghold. But a couple of years ago, my wife and I registered as independents because we believe that you need to be more concerned with just achieving success than achieving success by any means. And it just appears that that's where Donald Trump operates from.
Hmm. Ed, thanks for that. George Will, there are a lot of Eds in Florida, independent voters. And this 2020 election could turn in Florida on a very small group of those voters. What are your thoughts about Florida's role in the 2020 election with voters like Ed from Fleming Island?
Florida is incomparably the most important swing state in the country, and it is a genuine swing state. It is less purple than I think Texas is becoming, Arizona is becoming, and Georgia is becoming, and North Carolina is becoming, and Virginia already has become. If Florida drifts into the Democratic camp, if you add that to Florida, New York, Illinois, rock-solid states, I mean, the Democrats get 55 electoral votes from California without spending a day or a dime campaigning there. If Florida begins to drift purple and then turn blue, it'll be very hard to find a Republican path to 270 electoral votes.
We are talking to George Will, the noted newspaper columnist, political commentator, and out with a new book called The Conservative Sensibility. And you are listening to it on Florida Public Radio and the Florida Roundup. George, when it comes to Florida politics, the state legislature and the governor's mansion have been dominated by Republicans for two decades. But the approach regarding some issues has been very, very different between administrations. And this is most notable on the environment just in the past 12 months or so here in Florida. Governor Rick Scott, state agencies couldn't talk about climate change. Governor Scott would remind people that he is not a scientist. He didn't seek scientific advice. And then Republican Ron DeSantis came into the governor's mansion in no small part because of an endorsement from President Trump. Governor DeSantis appointed a chief science officer, a chief resilience officer, the first time in the state's history, has pushed to spend hundreds of millions of dollars on water quality. So I'm wondering how this kind of DeSantis Republicanism concerning the environment, at least, is viewed by the party outside of Florida.
Well, it's a good question. I know how it was viewed until Mr. Trump became the face of the Republican Party. Remember, it was Richard Nixon who created the Environmental Protection Agency.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Train and others who have headed that agency have been Republicans in good standing. I think much of the country is open to arguments about climate change. They're not as convinced as some people are, but that's perfectly normal given the history of prior projections about climate trends. But what interests me about Florida politics is that although, as you say, in statewide elections, Republicans have been dominating, neither Scott nor your governor gotten their current positions by landslides by any means.
No, very, very tight elections.
Exactly. And so small changes can have enormous consequences radiating all across the country if they start in Florida. Florida is a boulder dropped in the American lake, and it creates big waves.
That's a good way to put it, isn't it? Let's go to Michael in Pompano Beach. Hey, Michael, you're on the radio. Happy Friday. Go ahead.
Thank you. I just wanted to say that I was a registered Republican for many years, largely for philosophical reasons. I believed that in a country as big and diverse as ours, that local and state governments were better forms of governance than an overreaching federal government. However, in recent years, as a South Florida resident, I've just not been able, in good conscience, to continue supporting this party. I live in a diverse area, a very multi-ethnic area, great number of gay and lesbian friends, and I just cannot support a party that, on a practical, on-the-ground level, seems to be so filled with hate, even if on a philosophical level, it does stand for some of the things that I believe in.
Michael, thanks so much for that. Michael in Pompano Beach. George, well, you've been touching on this theme for a while. You broke with the GOP. Lots of listeners out there have, too. In the 2 minutes or so we have left toward the break, you know, we need two healthy, functioning political parties in this country. How does the Republican Party bring back some of those voters and address some of the this discontent?
There's an old story about the farmer who owned a mule that when he wanted to do something, he'd take a 2x4 and hit it over the forehead because he said it was the only way he could get its attention. And maybe in order to get the attention of the Republican Party, it needs to be hit over the head by the voters with the equivalent of a 2x4, which is a sound election thrashing. There's nothing like a defeat that concentrate a political party's mind on its message. And it seems to me that one is coming, not just in the White House, but at the state and local levels next time around, after which we will see whether or not the Republican Party gets a message.
Didn't we see something similar in 2012?
I beg your pardon?
Didn't we see something similar like that in 2012 with the Republican Party?
We did, and it didn't work. Partly because we had too many people on stage. The political parties are so weakened now that they don't filter out and select nominees. That's basically what our political parties are for, is to select presidential nominees, and they're doing a miserable job of it.
And so you think the GOP is headed toward defeat next year, it sounds like what you're saying.
I do indeed, yes. I think that holding the capturing the House is already out of reach. I think holding the Senate is going to be very difficult. They'll gain one seat in Alabama, probably, but Colorado and Arizona and a number of other states are in doubt, North Carolina included. Democrats will need to gain net three, which means they'll need to win four seats. That's doable.
George Will, we got to leave it there. Author, The Conservative Sensibility. He'll be at the Miami Book Fair on November 19th. George, thanks for your time today. We appreciate it here.
I enjoyed it very much.
Welcome back to the Florida Roundup here on Florida Public Radio. Thanks for listening this week. I'm Tom Hudson in Miami.
And I'm Melissa Ross in Jacksonville. Well, right now we're going to take a closer look at the state of Obamacare here in Florida. Health insurance signups begin today. Do you get your health insurance through healthcare.gov? What are your questions about getting covered? Call us up at 305-995-1800, tweets to at Florida Roundup, as we welcome Justine Griffin, medical reporter with the Tampa Bay Times, with us from that paper's newsroom. And Justine, thanks for joining us. It's important to point out that Florida leads the nation in Obamacare signups. What sort of shape is the health care law in here in Florida right now?
Sure. Hi. So Florida last year had about 1.8 million people sign up for the Affordable Care Act, which was the most out of any of the 39 states that use the federal exchange. That's pretty interesting, given the fact that there have been many attempts, both by the legislature to repeal the Affordable Care Act, but also some attempts in the courts over the last couple of years. And so there's a lot of confusion, I think, from consumers on what the future of the Affordable Care Act will look like. But knowing that, Florida still seems to be bucking that trend nationally, where you're seeing some dips in signups.
Mm-hmm. And Justine, the prices that Floridians are paying for their care through the Affordable Care Act, the premiums that they'll face next year for plans is essentially flat from what they're paying this year. So these year-over-year increases that we saw in the first few years of Obamacare, those have kind of evened out, haven't they?
Yes. So I spoke to many navigators, which are people who are trained to help consumers in Florida sign up for the Affordable Care Act. They're seeing prices for plans, both with premiums and copays, really stabilizing. We saw a good dip in prices last year, and that seems to be continuing this year. And many Floridians are going to see more options this year as well. There are more insurers that are joining the marketplace, so that's also bringing some prices down.
It's remarkable, isn't it, Justine, to note how durable this law has been. Despite many attempts to repeal it, dozens. And it endures. It's not completely fulfilling its promises, but it endures. And in Florida in particular, it's popular. Why do you think that is?
You know, that's a great point. And Florida is very unique, I think, to other states. We're a tourism-driven state. I think there are less employer-based plans out there for workers in Florida. So when you have people who work in the hospitality industries that maybe don't have an employer that offers them health care, there are many contractors, independent workers in the state. This is the only real option at this point.
Yeah.
The economics here, Justine, while the average premiums are essentially flat according to the statistics, there's still a wide range of what Floridians will likely have to pay for a monthly premium, even after a subsidy. It can range from $200 to $700 a month for a family of four making $58,000 a year based upon where they live. Why is that range so large? And is that unique in Florida?
That's a good question. I do think that Americans are experiencing that range in most states, and it really just comes down to income. There are plenty of subsidies, but I think the middle-class Americans really kind of get hit the hardest with some of these wide-ranging fluctuations in premiums. Plans are so individually based, it's hard to know. It's hard to see really trends across the board. It's mostly depending on that household income that really reflects what type of prices you're going to get.
Let me ask you this. I got an email today about signing up for coverage at healthcare.gov, and they make the point that coverage is cheaper than you think. Last year, 9 in 10 people qualified for financial help to make their premiums more affordable. In fact, 2 out of 3 customers at healthcare.gov can find a plan for $10 or less. Is that true? $10 or less?
That's a good question. I don't want to go on the record saying that that's true, but I've heard that anecdotally as well from many Floridians in this area, that they're surprised at the plans that they can find. And I really think it comes down to understanding how to navigate healthcare.gov. Health insurance is just tricky to begin with, and then trying to do that on your own, that's where these navigator programs come in and are really helpful.
And the budget for those have been cut so much, right? There are fewer of those navigators to help people.
Right. They've been cut substantially. So there's one navigator in the state of Florida that still has funding, and that's Florida Covering Kids and Families. They're based out of the University of South Florida. In 2017, they received $4.9 million in federal funds to help with marketing for open enrollment and to help enroll as many consumers as they can. Well, last year, their budget was cut by 80%, and they received just $1.2 million. And that is staying the same this year. So they are trying to reach as many people as they can with, obviously, much less when it comes to resources.
We're talking about Obamacare, the Affordable Care Act here in Florida. Healthcare.gov open for business for the next calendar year for coverage. Justine Griffith covers the medical business and healthcare for the Tampa Bay Times. She's with us from that paper's newsroom, 305-995-1800. Have you used an Affordable Care Act medical plan in the past? What were those experiences like? Do you expect to continue on, perhaps, if you get your insurance through that system in the next year? 305-995-1800. You are listening to the Florida Roundup from Florida Public Radio. Justine, we talk about the drop in federal support for navigators to help people sign up, the penalty if somebody who is supposed to sign up doesn't sign up, that's gone away. That's no longer there. So there's not that leverage any longer. So the individual mandate is gone. But yet, as you mentioned, you know, more than 1.5 million Floridians still sign up. And in fact, there's more competition for Affordable Care Act insurers in Florida. Companies want to get into this business. Doesn't that tell us perhaps that the market is in pretty good shape in Florida, if that's the case?
Yeah, I think so. You know, again, talking to these navigators who are really the boots on the ground during this time of year trying to get people signed up, they're saying that everything that opposers to the Affordable Care Act have said, insurers are going to drop off, people are going to find plans too expensive, it's all really been the opposite, at least what we're seeing here in Florida. There are more insurers getting into the marketplace, which is bringing prices down because there's more competition for plans. And I do think more people are finding affordable options and still robust healthcare options. The plans are covering more of their needs.
Obamacare enrollment kicks off today in Florida. If you want to get covered, go to healthcare.gov. David's in West Palm Beach. Hi, David. Go ahead.
Thank you. I am an independent consultant that helps hospitals and large physician groups collect their bills. And I have a quick anecdote and then a comment about the Medicaid expansion. The anecdote is that when you sign up for Obamacare, which I did before I became Medicare eligible, that you have to estimate your income, and that is what sets your subsidy. And I had a good year last year. I had underestimated my income, and so I had to pay back $17,000, you know, on my income tax for subsidies that I received for my daughter and me. So that's an interesting kind of gotcha that's out there. Mm-hmm. And as to the Medicaid expansion, by all objective measures, be it access to care, the health of the hospital industry, the health outcomes and health indicators for the population at large, the states, even the blue states that expanded Medicaid under the Affordable Care Act, are better off and their citizens are better off. And it seems disappointing to this lifelong Democrat that for, you know, interesting, let's put it that way, ideological reasons, the Republicans in this state just absolutely refuse to.
Okay, David. Yeah, and we're short on time, so I didn't mean to cut you off. Justine, what about that? And by the way, we still have about 13% of the state's population uninsured. Justine.
Right.
Yeah, go ahead.
So there's about 2.7 million Floridians who are still uninsured. And last year, the United States saw the first increase in the number of people without health insurance since the Affordable Care Act was passed in 2010. And this was data that came out from the Census Bureau earlier this year, which is interesting and I think somewhat alarming to a lot of people. And overall, the nation's population, you know, we're seeing this increase in the uninsured rate. And a lot of healthcare experts are chalking that up to just confusion around the Affordable Care Act and its future, you know, among other issues like Medicaid expansion.
We also saw some research from Georgetown University that found a jump specifically in the number of uninsured children in Florida.
Right.
One out of every 13 kids in Florida don't have health insurance. Why?
Sort of for those same reasons. You know, the Affordable Care Act did help that, but we're seeing this rise, especially in Florida, over the last 2 years. Last year, or the 2016-2017 year, we saw a dramatic rise in the number of uninsured children. It jumped by 37,000 children in 1 year, and then that rise is continuing again for 2018. And it's part of a national trend, but Florida is a state, obviously, that has not chosen to expand Medicaid, which does serve a lot of children. And then even with the Affordable Care Act this year, talking to experts who are getting ready for the open enrollment period said they've, you know, they're just seeing a lot of misinformation out there. There was some concern over the public charge rule that did not go into effect, that federal courts had put a stay on that rule, and it really did not affect anyone signing up for the Affordable Care Act, but it did affect people signing up for Medicaid, and there was a lot of confusion over who that would affect, and would that put some families in jeopardy if they tried to access a government-run healthcare program. And I think just that uncertainty draws a lot of people away from it, to access healthcare.
And we need to leave it there. Go to healthcare.gov to enroll. Open enrollment starts today. And we thank you for your expertise, Justine Griffin, medical reporter with the Tampa Bay Times. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Well, that's our show. Thanks for listening this Friday. The Florida Roundup is produced by WJCT Public Media in Jacksonville and WLRN Public Media in Miami. Heather Schatz and Denise Royal are our producers.
Jason Zabka is the WLRN Director of Radio Programming, also our Technical Director for the hour. WLRN's Director of Radio Operations is Peter Mertz. Engineering help from Doug Peterson, Charles Michaels, and Brady Corum. Our theme music is provided by Miami jazz guitarist Aaron Libos. More at aaronlibos.com. Thanks for listening. Have a great weekend. I'm Tom Hudson.
And I'm Melissa Ross. We'll be back next Friday at noon.